This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Cravings podcast with Pete Dillon, online at joy.org.au/cravings and live Saturdays from 1 p.m. on Joy 94.9 in Melbourne. Exploring all that's finest in food and beverage across Melbourne and Victoria. Sponsored by La Spaghettata. Over 35 years of food, family and fun at 238 Lygon Street, Carlton. Wine and dine with La Spaghettata for an authentic Italian experience. Pasta, wine, seafood, steak and so much more. Dine in and enjoy the authentic sights and sounds of Lygon Street. Or order takeaway now via Deliveroo, Uber Eats or Foodora. Eat, drink, love with La Spaghettata. Call 9663 6102. Visit laspaghettata.com.au or find them on Facebook.
Have you ever been blacklisted from a restaurant? Have you ever been denied a booking at a restaurant because maybe you didn't show up last time? We're going to explore that today. It's nice to be back in the studio with my buddy Tad as well. We've got that coming up, plus so much more. We're going to start today exploring the connection between our gay community and food as well here in Melbourne. Good afternoon. Our buzzword today may not be cravings, Tad.
No, it might not be. It might be more blacklisting.
It could be. We are Tad Lombardo and Pete Dillon. This is Cravings on Joy 94.9. It's 4 minutes past one on your radio station. Delighted to be with you for the next hour as we unpack a bit of an issue that's affecting our community, our food community. And that is that there's a bit of an epidemic that's costing the Australian restaurant industry, it is alleged, about $75 million a year in no-shows, people who book and don't show up.
It's a huge problem. And I think it's one of those situations where in the food industry, it hasn't really been dealt with until now. You know, the other industries, it has been dealt with, like in the airlines or insurance. And
if you don't show up for your flight, you pay for it.
That's right. And everyone accepts that as being the norm.
Mm. And one of the things that I support when Prefix opened, for example, where you pre-purchased your tickets to dinner.
Right.
I think that is one of the solutions. The other is what Australia's number one online restaurant booking website, Dimi. We've spoken to Dimi before on this program. I think actually back when Dimi released.
Right.
When it first came to the fore with Stephen Primutico. So Dimi has released some data regarding no-shows. There's been a... perhaps we should talk to Jared Chapman, who is the general manager of Dimi, and start to unpack this discussion.
Definitely.
He joins us on the phone. Jared, good afternoon.
Hi, guys. How are you going?
Good, thank you.
Hi, Jared.
How long has Dimi been in operation? Let's get on to Dimi first.
About 7 years.
7 years. So, yes, we did... I remember doing an interview on this show when it launched, which all of a sudden is aging me quite a bit. So, Jared, this research that Dimi, did you undertake this research or did you go searching for this data, or is this just a bit of a data dump from what your service is able to provide?
It's always something that Stephen's been very, very passionate about, and we try and stay in touch with all our restaurant partners and find out what their trials and tribulations are. So this is always something that's a pretty big topic.
So about a year ago, or maybe just a little bit more, Dimi introduced a product that allows restaurant partners or restaurants to blacklist customers who don't show up. Obviously, this is not people who just don't show up once or forget they've got a booking? Is this serial no-shows, or can it be as simple as you didn't show up for your booking last Thursday for the restaurant in Hawthorne, you're out?
Well, it's always up to the discretion of the restaurant owner. I mean, like, they're in the business to make money, and I would imagine that it's not easy to fill a restaurant all week, so I'm sure that they're not just, like, willy-nilly blacklisting everyone. But there aren't any, like, rules or guidelines as to how many times you don't show up before you get blacklisted.
And I'm sure there's also some good reasons why people don't show up. It could be something dramatic that's happened to them, and obviously those are certain situations that need to be dealt with on an individual basis, and obviously, the restaurants have an opportunity to blacklist or not.
Mm.
But Ted,
if I'd invited you to my house for dinner,
yep,
and something dramatic happened, you had a car accident, you fell off your bike, choose it, something dramatic, you or somebody who's coming with you, or somebody would say, shit, I've got to send Pete a text or ring Pete and say, I'm not going to make it to dinner, because you know that I'm home slaving over a hot stove.
That's right.
It's the same amount of respect that has to be applied to restaurants. Would you agree with that, Jared?
Yeah, 100%, mate. And we've tried to make it as easy as possible. And it's not cancellations that are killing the industry. It's the actual just not showing up at all. So if you don't make a booking 3 or 4 days out, things do come up. We definitely appreciate that our consumers do lead lives. And sometimes, like you said,
we might be working late. The babysitter can't get there, or what? You know, you've had a bit of a bingle in the car or something. I mean, I think that the courtesy part of this is not the bit that we need to talk about. It is the fact that people are booking, you know, 2, 3, some, up to 5 restaurants, and then deciding at the last minute which one they're going to eat at.
Yeah, and that's what we're trying to put a stop to. I mean, we do try and help as much as we can. We make it easy to cancel the booking. I mean, that's not the desired outcome, obviously. But, I mean, all we're trying to say is, like, hey, guys, we know it's a problem for the restaurants. It does hurt them more than you might think. So if you can't make it, just jump on your email, click the cancellation link, and let them, like, give them a chance to fill the table.
And I'm assuming this is something that's clearly explained to diners as they're making their reservation, isn't it? And you know, and what would the time frame be before a cancellation is made versus being blacklisted in it? And I know it's a situation too where it's only happening to people who are serial offenders. But what's the status on that side of things?
The time frame of what, sorry? Like, how before you get blacklisted?
Yeah, I mean, if it happens once, I'm assuming that's not going to equate to an immediate blacklisting.
I can't imagine restaurant owners would be doing that to their customers.
Yeah.
I mean, we all would imagine that we dine pretty frequently at restaurants. You kind of the restaurants get to know their customers. So, I mean, if you don't show up once, you turn up to 15 of the last bookings, and they're just going to turn you off straight away.
But
their goal is to look after their customers as well. But this is, for people that are continuously doing it, we're just trying to give the restaurants a chance to kind of make sure that they're getting their tables filled.
Jared Chapman is our guest. He's the general manager of Dimmy, which is an online booking service. Jared, I'm quite staggered by the numbers, and I wonder if you might break them down for us.
Dimmy, the 75 million?
No, I'm getting to the 75 million in a minute. restaurants have blacklisted 38,000 diners in the last 12 months.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people.
It is. But you can get serial. Like, it's not all individuals, obviously. Like, you could possibly be blacklisted from two or three, so you'll find those serial offenders, as you were mentioning before. If you're booking 5 or 6 different places and each restaurant is then turning that customer off, I mean, it's quite difficult for us to say you need people, but I would say that, there's definitely evidence that the restaurants are using this tool, and it's something that they've needed for a while.
38,000 people. Or instances,
blacklistings
in the last year. That's a year, and this is up over 3,000 since the data was released a year ago. This is an extraordinary number.
It is, and I guess it just points more to the epidemic. It shows how much it is hurting the restaurant owners. I mean, if you talk to any restaurant owner, they will all tell you the exact same story. It's difficult to fill your restaurant. You're working on low margins. It's not something that they want to do. But at the end of the day, having empty tables on your Saturday night, it just hurts them this much.
I'm making the assumption that if it's a popular restaurant on a high street in a suburb, that that table will probably be taken up by a walk-in, because restaurants have walk-ins, and there's, you know, very few restaurants will book at 100% capacity. But, you know, that if you're a restaurant that needs to be found in a suburb that's not known for its restaurants, so people actually have to make the effort to get in their car and get to York, get an Uber or whatever it might be, that is where it's hitting the hip pocket the most.
Yeah, I would imagine so as well. Like, I mean, when you look at the amount of restaurants we have in Australia, you've got 10 to 20,000 of them. They can't all be on a high street. So, yeah, more and more these days with rent prices going up, the restaurant owners are looking to buy in less popular areas, but then make sure they market it better and make sure they do book those restaurants, and they're using all their social media tools and their marketing tools to get customers to come there. So if they do have an empty table, you're absolutely right, the walk-ins just aren't there to cover it.
It's staggering, these numbers, and we're going to keep you for a bit, Jared. We've got to keep the station alive with some community service announcements, but we're going to pop you just back onto hold for a minute, and we'll come back to you because I want to explore this number of $75 million a year, because when you consider the contribution to our industry or the contribution to our economy that our industry makes, $75 million is a hell of a lot of money. Jared Chapman is the general manager of Dimi. He is staying with us.
Bonjour, I am Gabriel Gatte. You are listening to Cravings with Peter Dillon on Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
You are indeed with Tad Lombardo and myself, Pete Dillon. This is Cravings. I'm back in the studio. It's kind of fun being back in Melbourne just for the day. Hey, we're speaking with Jared Chapman. He's the general manager of Dimi, which is an online booking service, about this incredible amount of blacklistings that are occurring on the restaurant side of people who are just fed up with diners not showing up to a restaurant booking, particularly those smaller businesses that are reliant upon those bookings. Jared, Tad and I were just talking, I want to get to this is costing the industry in the vicinity of $75 million a year. Break that number down for me, because it's an extraordinary number.
Well, if you quickly divide it by the number of restaurants potentially in Australia, and it's quite hard to find the exact number, but if you're putting it around 15,000 restaurants in Australia, obviously it comes down to a per restaurant level. So if you're looking at $5,000 per restaurant per year, it breaks down very, very quickly. And you can imagine $5,000 per restaurant, losing that amount of money is quite a lot. It hurts them quite a bit, and it adds up very, very quickly for the industry.
It's also not just the loss of that individual cover, though, too. It's also the fact that that restaurant has a certain staffing level that they have to maintain based on their reservation numbers. It's the wastage of food that might not be served, but pre-prepared, and also the loss of beverage sales, which don't come into anything until the guest is seated and you know, being served.
True.
So it's so much more than just an individual cover, and it just seems to be a lack of respect in a lot of sense that people feel. I think, you know, a lot of people feel that, especially certain more famous restaurants that get a lot of attention and you know,
they have a celebrity chef involved with it.
Yeah.
A perception that restaurants are
rolling in money.
Exactly.
You know, and I think the stats actually show, even with those more higher profile restaurants, the profit margins are still only 5-10% when you look at everything.
At best.
Yeah.
Mm. Jared, I've got a list here of some of the excuses. and it's one particular restaurant in Sydney, but we're going to use this because I'm sure that these are all quite similar. One is, we booked two restaurants as we couldn't decide, and now we'd like to cancel our reservation with you. That's a lack of courtesy to me. I thought we were better mannered than that.
Yeah, it's always tough. I mean, there's the excuses where you kind of have a forehead slapping moment. You just kind of think, why? But there are legitimate ones as well.
The dog ate my homework sort of stuff, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a little bit. But either way, at the end of the day, no matter what the reason or whatever the excuse is, I'm sure the restaurant owners don't really mind. It's still an empty table for them, and it's still hurting them. So
exactly,
I mean, it's just a big call out that we're trying to do. We're trying to educate our consumers. We're trying to help our restaurants out a little. We're trying to say, hey guys, if you can't make a booking, if you booked online, all you have to do is just jump in your email, which these days everyone has them on their phone. It takes about 10 seconds to cancel it, and then the restaurant owner, I'm sure, would appreciate it. There's no social awkwardness anymore either. You don't have to worry about having that weird conversation down the phone where you've got to try and make up an excuse.
You do it online. I mean, it's... I want to ask our listeners, because we have a, quite a broad cross-section of people who join us every week, Tad, to let us know, what's the best excuse for getting out of a restaurant booking that you've heard? And you can send us a message, 0427-JOY949, if you like to use the text. Same way you could cancel a reservation. 1300-JOY949 if you would like to call to cancel your reservation today. Or you can email onair@joy.org.au if you'd like to email the cancellation of your reservation. But tell us, what is the best excuse for getting out of a restaurant booking that you've heard? It may be your own. I don't know. You can you can be anonymous if you like as well. Jared Chapman is the general manager of Dimmy, the online booking service. Jared, let's talk about some demographics here, because there are particular suburbs or particular places where there are a higher number of blacklisted folk than in others. I think the top five I have, or the top six, no, top five I have, Sydney, Surfers Paradise, Melbourne, Darlinghurst and Surry Hills. Would this perhaps suggest that those areas may be more populated with the foodie folk, or as some might like to call them, wankers, that this is sort of kind of the scourge of a modern society? I know it sounds a bit like a first world problem, but for restaurants it's not. That these particular suburbs sort of top the list?
It's interesting when you look at it on a suburb level. I mean, I know personally the suburbs you just mentioned are just very, very highly densely populated with restaurants. So, I would say the data is probably skewed a little towards where the restaurants are. I don't imagine too much that it's trying to put everyone in a category. I don't think you would say it's a category.
Sorry, I shouldn't call them wankers.
No, but you know what I mean? Like, there's always going to be certain people, and I don't think they fall into any sort of like trend or demographic, that just don't appreciate how much they are hurting the restaurants. The suburbs you just named, I think they're just highly densely populated with restaurants, and then therefore they're going to be higher on the list when it comes to no-shows as well.
Yeah, I'm going to challenge that thought for a minute, because if I look at these suburbs, there's 1, 2, 3 within what is considered the Sydney CBD. Melbourne probably has more restaurants per capita than Sydney. There is only Melbourne as a CBD. It doesn't bring in South Melbourne, St Kilda, or any of the sort of the close suburbs, Fitzroy, Carlton. I wonder, and this is another assumption, maybe Melbourne people are a bit more courteous than those in our north of the border.
I would say potentially, but I mean, Melbourne has always been more of a booking city. I know that they kind of hit the restaurant industry, and they always had a big restaurant boom earlier than Sydney did. So potentially it's just that the customers are a bit more educated down there. Maybe over time they've kind of got used to cancelling a booking if they weren't able to make it, whereas Sydney might be a little bit behind on that front. So that could be a factor as well.
Jared, is there a solution? And I would like to pose a solution that I mentioned at the top of the program. There was a restaurant open in Melbourne called Prefix. It didn't last, but one of the ideas with Prefix was you would buy a ticket to the restaurant, like you would buy a plane ticket or a theatre ticket or a concert ticket. You pay for it there and then you go to the restaurant and you enjoy the experience. Is there, and I know we used to do it back in the 80s, is there a way that we would actually, for every booking, there is a credit card number taken, and if you become a no-show, your credit card is charged, and that becomes the terms and conditions under which this industry operates?
Yeah, absolutely. And Dimmy does have that facility. And we do educate our restaurants that they are able to use that if they would like. I think it's always a challenge that, I mean, for the ticket option, it's the balance between making sure that you don't get no-shows, but also that you get a full restaurant as well. I mean, unless every single restaurant in Australia did it, customers would still have a choice to go to a restaurant that didn't do that. So it's going to take time to eradicate it completely. You can flip switches and throw out ideas, and I mean, I've been reading a bit of the responses, or a few of the responses to this press, and people are saying, like, yeah, everyone should just do it like tickets, but that's always difficult when you choose different items on the menu. So unless all restaurants now go to set menu,
if you do not show for this booking, there will be a cancellation fee of, you know, $100 per cover. per head, or $80 per head, or $70 per head. So at least by doing that, you can cover the costs of having staff on. Because if you are a small restaurant, let's say a 40-seater in the burbs, your average spend per head is $100, and you know that you're booked 40 people on Friday night. If you get three tables don't show, that could be 25% of your income for the night. So yeah, I would go with this, you know, what's $75 a head if you don't show?
I would just say restaurants are scared a little. There's probably the fear that if again, like you're saying that some of these suburbs, they have like five or six restaurants, if you've got one or two that are throwing down this credit card, like kind of guarantee, then customers are therefore just going to book the ones that don't have the credit card guarantee. So I'd say that's a fear for restaurant owners to adopt it. I know on Valentine's Day, a lot of restaurants do it. Just based on the fact that every restaurant is packed out, so every restaurant is doing it. Therefore,
Mother's Day, Christmas Day, Father's Day, choose the day, but that's how it operates on those busy days. So maybe we need to start educating the industry itself that this is a way around it. I don't know whether it can be driven by the Restaurant and Catering Association or one of those major bodies that supports the industry. But certainly it does make sense, Tad.
Yeah, and I think, too, whenever you have a situation where you're trying to change a human behavior, it's always difficult. And I think it's really brave of you guys to be doing that in the first place because, you know, it's something that will catch on because, like the press reads, it's an endemic problem. Just wondering, though, those restaurants that you have, are there any statistics that indicate a restaurant that charges ahead of time, you know, does any better or worse off from a reservations point of view than one that does not? You know, like
the more popular restaurants are more comfortable doing it because they're already at the point where they're at capacity. But when they do turn these on, they don't lose much of that customer base anyway. Like, and they're being booked out so far in advance that if it's slowed down bookings at all, they're still seeing those full services.
Right.
So for them, it has completely eradicated it, which is great. Sadly, though, like not every restaurant is in that situation, so they're not able to just flick a switch and completely fix the problem.
Right.
But you're absolutely right in the sense that it is a matter of educating the industry, and that's, I guess, a big part of what we're trying to do. We're trying to educate restaurants to say, like, hey, guys, this is an option if you want to start working your way down this path, like potentially doing a Friday or Saturday. And then we're trying to educate the community as well and saying, hey, guys, like, just cancel. It hurts the restaurant industry. Like, it's not hard.
No, that's right. And has there been a lot of backlash since this has hit the press and everything, you know, has there been a lot of backlash from that point of view from the general public that this is happening, or what's the feedback been?
I mean, not really. I mean, if you think about it, what are you gonna say? Hey, I didn't show up for my booking, so therefore you're being unfair.
I think some people would think that, unfortunately. But yeah.
I mean, potentially, but we haven't heard any of it, really, no.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
We haven't seen that. Yeah, we haven't seen that consumers are just up in arms saying, hey, I didn't show up for my booking. I took $500 out of a restaurant's pocket. Therefore, this is unfair. So we haven't seen too much of that.
That's good.
I think there are solutions, and Jared, I think as the industry, we probably need to put some heads together around the table and come up with what those solutions may be, because $75 million is an extraordinary number of a hit for the industry each year. Mate, we're really grateful for your time for joining us today.
No, I really appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. If there was a message that you wanted to get out to finish with that you would like our audience to take on board, what would that be?
I just appreciate what the restaurants are trying to do. As you guys have said, they work hard, they try and look after you, so it's a little bit of complicated to go a long way.
It does indeed. Jared Chapman is the General Manager of Dimmy, the online reservation service. Jared, thank you for your time.
Cheers, guys.
Fascinating conversation, Tatum, and I think the industry needs to have, because in some ways, by not creating an initial charge fee or something when you do book, you are almost, the industry could almost be seen as being responsible for creating this beast in the first place, because it's been allowed to slip for so long. Some sponsor announcements, and we've got some discussions to have in a little while around the very heart of our industry and the cross-section of the queer community with hospitality and how that has happened over the last 100 or so years. Tad and I are going to start that conversation today, and we'll sort of bring in some people over the next little while.
It'll be a series of different
to help us continue as well.
Shows, yeah.
It's 19 degrees. We're heading for just 21 today. I'm feeling cold. you're on Cravings on Joy 94.9. It's 27 minutes past 1.
Cravings will be back shortly, so don't go too far. But if you do miss anything, you'll hear it on the Cravings Podcast at joy.org.au/cravings via iTunes or your favourite podcast site. Sponsored by La Spaghettata. Over 35 years of food, family and fun at 238 Lygon Street, Carlton. Wine and dine with La Spaghettata for an authentic Italian experience. Pasta, wine, seafood, steak and so much more. Eat, drink, love with La Spaghettata. Call 9663-6102. Visit laspaghettata.com.au or find them on Facebook.
You are on Cravings here on Joy 94.9. Ted Lombardo and Pete Dillon taking you through until 2 o'clock. Ted, interesting discussion that you and I had in the week. And
yes.
I think this, I'd like you to go on a bit of a journey for me.
Total journey, yeah. One of the things I think it's important to talk about are things that really aren't necessarily talked about out there. And one of the things that I'm interested in, and we've talked about our shared interest in this, is trying to explore how gay culture intersects with the food culture. You know, we know how gay culture intersects with visual arts, performing arts. It's out there. It's celebrated. But I don't necessarily, and I could be completely wrong about this, and I'm happy to be corrected, but I don't see a lot of that celebration in the food world. Necessarily.
And look, you're absolutely right. I think it's always been considered that our industry has a certain proportion of queer folk, men
yeah.
and women, lesbians and gays who run restaurants. That happens now.
Yeah.
And if we think back to some of our guests over the last few years, there's yeah. been quite a few who are gay and lesbian, who
That's
are
right.
chefs and restaurant owners. And if we look at people like Chrissy Manfield and,
yeah.
and some of those very well-known chefs who are gay, Kylie yep. Kwong is another good example,
yeah.
In Sydney. But I think in Melbourne there's an interesting journey that we want to go on over the next
Definitely.
Couple of months, where we're going to keep sort of exploring this story from various places. Graham Willett is an academic from the University of Melbourne and yep. Has worked for a long time with Australian Lesbian and Gay Archives.
Yes.
With ALGA. I know in a number of years ago he put out a book called The Secret Side of, I think it's The Secret Side of Melbourne. And it's quite an interesting look at Melbourne's queer history,
yep.
going back to the late 1800s and even
yeah.
beforehand. And I know I had a chat with Fiona Sweetman, who's been another guest on this program. She runs Secret Walking Tours of
yep.
Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going to do something a couple of years ago for Midsummer, where we actually did a walking tour of Melbourne,
oh, okay. yep.
looking at some of those buildings
yep.
that once housed places for people to hang out. And those places were, I think there's some very interesting descriptions of what we were called, because they...
yeah, and it's all part of the history of Melbourne as well. It's
yeah.
not just, you know, for our community. It's part of the greater realm of things, I think.
I'll read you a bit of The Secret Histories of Queer yeah. Melbourne by Graham Willett, and he says, beyond the proud civic architecture, the boulevards, the parks and gardens, there is a Melbourne less visible, less celebrated, but no less marvellous. From the earliest days, men who loved men and women who loved women, sodomites and spinsters, camps and gays and lesbians, queers of all kind, have made the city their own, giving it a vibrant history. So that's talking about the secret
yep.
queer history of Melbourne. And I think you raise a really interesting point. Back when I was doing my apprenticeship in the 80s,
yeah.
There was quite a community of poofs and lesbians
yep.
Who ran restaurants or who were chefs. It was quite common to meet a gay chef. And it seems, and I was having this conversation not so long ago, and I don't know who with, but
sure.
Where the tide has turned a little, and there seems to be there's so many more chefs who are married, and some of the guys I was hanging out with when
yep.
I was an apprentice who are now very well known.
Yeah.
I've seen a shift in them as well, where they've gone from potentially gay to straight, or maybe they sit somewhere in the middle, maybe they're
yeah.
bi. It's interesting that the industry has become far more heteronormative in some senses.
Right. And I think sometimes too, it and again, you know, is it a situation where because a lot of kitchens are still very, you know, kind of straight male dominated and
well, male dominated
or male
certainly.
Dominated. Yeah, definitely. But what I mean is it's still not okay to come out as being gay if you're working in that environment?
I certainly don't think so. I think our industry is incredibly altruistic.
Yeah.
Our industry is a very kind industry and supports.
I agree. Yeah.
You know, supports this particular program as well.
Definitely.
But you know, there's the likes of Jerry Mai, and you know, we've got quite an identity within our restaurant community. But it'd be interesting to explore this a little more. I'm looking forward to where we're going to go with it.
Yeah.
And I think, as I mentioned, Graham Willett would be great to get in and talk about what he knows. I want to
definitely
sort of jump into a story of one particular place, which is probably where we could start today. Her Majesty's Hotel, which is. In South Yarra. It has a rather checkered history, you might say. And if you have a look in South Yarra in the 20s and 30s, it was sort of, you know, it was all mansions on the river. And then as the 60s and 70s arrived in the last century, it became, you know, a lot of the mansions were turned into flats, and therefore a lot of unmarried people could live together as roommates,
right.
I guess.
Quote, unquote, roommates.
We've all been there. We've got a couple of messages already. This will be interesting. Hi, I'm struggling to understand your program. Gay culture exists throughout every facet of life, not just in the arts or hospitality industry. We are the doctors, engineers, sports personalities. We artists, we designers, or even funeral directors and pilots. Let's move beyond the gate, please. Show the way only in the arts, we're a formidable group of individuals. I don't disagree with that point of view.
Neither do I.
However, what we want to explore is going back 100 years, the juxtaposition between our community, because we needed places to gather.
Definitely.
Like, you know, we've had discussions over the last little while with the closure of the Greyhounds and various other venues that were specifically gay or lesbian or accepting of all, that when we lived underground as a community, we needed places to gather and places where we could go and feel safe.
That's right.
And where we could identify. And it certainly didn't happen to me. I mean, I was born in the 60s, grew up in the 70s and 80s in an industry that was always accepting of difference. But I think having an exploration about how our food culture was defined back then, I'm not talking so much about now. I mean, I take the point
different.
Of that that correspondent that now, you know, we are everywhere. We are engineers and doctors and sports people. But going back to the places where we needed to get together, always undercover, where homosexuality was illegal and
that's
prosecutable.
Right.
And that's not a word, is it?
No, it
could be prosecuted.
Yeah.
You know, there are places like Val's Cafe in the 1950s, and Val herself was a lesbian, and it was a place you could go and you knew that you would be amongst other like-minded people
safe.
Without having to identify.
Right. That's right. But it's also a step further than that, too, as far as our food industry is concerned. It's how does that intersection of the culture translate to a dish or translate to service front of house? You know, because it does, and it would have a distinct effect on that. And I think that's the sort of thing too. That would be interesting to look at and to see and see how that translates to it. You know, and yes, there are certain industries, obviously, you know, where stereotypes come into it. You know, like airlines. You know, pretty much every male flight attendant assumed that he
assumed
would be gay.
To be gay,
you know,
correct. Every male dancer is assumed to be.
Yeah,
gay.
Exactly. Mm. And that's not necessarily right. And anyway, but it's just it's just trying to find out if there's a connection and how it's influenced. You know, just in the same way that you know, when we had Italian immigration starting, you know, a lot of the food translated to that, you know, or Greek or whatever it is. So it's just trying to find that link.
Can we put queer on a plate, do you think?
Possibly.
I don't know.
So. We'll find that out, though.
It's something we want to explore.
Yeah.
And it's, I really want to go back to that correspondent who said, because they haven't left us a name, but the person who sent us that text message who sort of states that they know we are everywhere and we know we are everywhere. But it's I think, from an historical perspective, would our industry have been different if homosexuality wasn't illegal? Would there more places have proliferated because of you know, the very broad acceptance of an LGBT community?
That's right, and I think too, again, with all due respect to the comment, I don't disagree with that too. But I also think that Tolerance and acceptance are two different things.
Yes.
And we are not 100% accepted, because if we were, we'd have 100% equality. So that's something that's not happened. So
there we go. Yeah. We will take a break, have some community service announcements, and return to continue this discussion, Ted and I, around how the queer culture affects our food culture. It's 18 minutes to 2 on Cravings on Joy 94.9.
Hi, I'm Manny Feldel, and you are with Pete Dillon on Cravings on Joy 94.9.
Manu, I'm with Tad as well, remember? It is a quarter to 2 on Cravings here on Joy 94.9, 18 degrees, heading for top of 21 today. It's mighty chilly out there.
It would be for you. You've come south of the border.
I haven't had a day less than 30 degrees, I think. There was a record broken in Brisbane the other day, and we're north of Brisbane, but there was a record broken in Brisbane. 27 consecutive days over 30 degrees.
Really? 27?
Yeah. And amazing. Then there's another one in northern New South Wales.
Right.
Which got to something like 51 days above 30 degrees in a particular place. I think it was Texas.
Oh, okay.
Which is a town in northern New South Wales. Quite alarming. I am quite chilly coming back just for the day.
Oh, don't start.
We were talking, and we will continue this discussion over the next little while about the interception or the intersection of the queer community with food. And we had somebody rightly respond to us and say, look, you know, we are everywhere, and doctors, lawyers, sports people, hospitality, arts, the works. But I think what we want to explore is very much the history. And I did mention Her Majesty's in South Yarra. It's being developed into 11 luxury apartments or something like that. But back in the 60s, it was known colloquially as Maisie's. It was the camp name for the bloke who ran the pub.
Yeah.
Who was a gay fella. It was a very trendy sort of place, and the beautiful people were starting to gather, and they weren't disconcerted about mixing in the same circle as queer people, because it sort of made them feel a bit trendy and liberal. But there were still two separate spaces within Her Majesty's in the 60s, the camp side and the straight side. So those that didn't want to be associated with the queer side could sort of hang in the still straight part of the pub, which it's sort of... back in the 60s, I think if you look historically where we're living in a... we're starting to emerge from the shadows of the repression of the 50s and those decades that came beforehand where... homosexuality was starting to be going toward tolerated, I think, certainly more than accepted. But, that's one example, I think, of the spaces where people would gather. And I think if you look today where we need much less of a space to gather because of the inclusion and acceptance of our community everywhere, that... It must have been incredibly brave for, I think, the business owners.
Definitely.
Val's Cafe, I mentioned, was down in Swanson Street. It was in the 50s.
Yeah.
There are other places, when I was talking to Fiona Sweetman back in the 20s, that were cafes, and there were certain ways that they would identify the fact that they would welcome a gay and lesbian presence. Flinders Street Station used to be a beat.
Right, yeah.
Way back.
And obviously, even before that, it would have been underground. That it just wasn't accepted at all. Until people start taking a bit more of a chance or a bit of a responsibility and wanting to make it a bit more normalized, if that's the right word. And I mean, nobody wants to be normal, but
oh God, no,
I don't know. But
how terribly dull.
Exactly. But when you're talking about that viewpoint of people being accepting of other people that might be slightly different. That's what I'm referring to.
I'm really excited that we're going to talk to Graham Willett about this because he has done a lot of research on not just the obvious parts of our queer culture, but certainly the more subversive parts. And I think that's where food, or not so much food, but the food industry. I did ask before whether we can put queer on a plate. I don't know that we can. I don't know that there is. I don't know that something that a gay chef puts on a plate is any different to what a straight chef puts on a plate.
Yeah.
Because I don't think we can claim to be any more creative or any more. You look at some of the great chefs of the world. They're predominantly, I won't say all of them, but if you look at the top 50 chefs in the world, I'd say 45 of those chefs are married.
Right.
To women.
Sure.
Because there's very few women in that list. So I wouldn't suggest that we as a community can claim to be any more creative or any better as chefs.
Oh, no, not at all. Mm. I wouldn't suggest
that. No, so second. I'm sort of going, I'm flipping to the other side. So whether we can express our sexuality on a plate, I don't know.
Yeah. I'm not 100% convinced either, but I guess we'll find that out.
we are going to, and I'm sure that our audience is going to let us know as well. Sorry, I'm driving using voice to text. I think you answered it well. I think it's really important that we don't limit ourselves. I'm a scientist and I go boxing. I don't prescribe necessarily to the gay world. And I think it's important that other people out there can freely be themselves without having to feel like they're odd or different. That is the perfect example of exactly what we've been trying to say.
Yeah.
Where we did feel odd and different, and we weren't accepted in a broader community by families and those sorts of things. I'm not talking about you and I, I'm talking about generations.
Of course.
Back in the early 1900s and beyond. You know, not every gay man likes Kylie. I don't.
Okay.
You know,
say anything bad about Kylie.
No, I don't. I don't. I'm not a big fan of Madonna. I don't like Barbara Streisand.
You don't like chocolate either. But
I don't like chocolate. You know, I don't think any of that makes me any less of a poof.
Not
I
at
still
all.
Like men.
Yeah.
<That's> oddly enough. So I think there is a sense that our industry could have been shaped by some very, very flamboyant people. And I look back to, again, if we go back to the 70s, the likes of Bernard King. I think there is a fine example of somebody who was on Australian television, who was, I think everybody on Australian television in the 70s was camp. There's a text message that is just question marks. I don't think everybody who was on, I think anybody who was on TV in the 70s was camp. I don't think that we need to explain that. But certainly there was an understanding, I suppose, even when I went into the industry in the very early 80s, told my father I wanted to be a chef. He sort of accepted that.
Yep.
He didn't accept 10 years before that when I told him I wanted to be a dancer.
Right. No. That was a no. Yeah.
No. So it's quite intriguing, I think, to be able to explore, what our past was and how our past evolved and the influence of our industry in that past.
Mm. Yeah, it'll be a good way to just see where it takes us, and we don't have a defined path. And
we will talk to some industry luminaries. We're going to have a chat to, if we can, Tony Tan.
Yes.
Who's been around the industry for a very long time. Tony's a wonderful fellow.
Yeah.
We should try and talk to Elizabeth Chong again.
Yeah, definitely.
Because she was around in the 50s.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
We will return. We won't be here next Saturday because there is a very special broadcast coming to you from Mardi Gras from Sydney. So Tad and I are having the day off.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
And we return the following week, and I think we have a day off again
the following week.
So, you know, we might pop in once or twice in the next month and say hello to you. Thanks for your company today. Always good to have you with us. And, Tad, thank you for your company.
Thank you for coming in all the way from Noosa.
All the way from Noosa to do this show with you.
Thank you.
Kind of me, isn't it?
It is.
We will be back in 2 weeks. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Wherever you're eating, make sure you eat well. And if you do make a reservation, for heaven's sake, make sure you turn up.
Yes.
Just a bit of courtesy, or at least ring to say you're not coming. We need to say thanks to Jared Chapman from Dimmy, who joined us earlier in the program as well. That's it from us. We'll leave you with...
Thanks for listening to another Cravings podcast with Pete Dillon. Online at joy.org.au/cravings and live Saturdays from 1 p.m. on Joy 94.9 in Melbourne. Exploring all that's finest in food and beverage across Melbourne and Victoria. Sponsored by La Spaghettata. Over 35 years of food, family and fun at 238 Lygon Street, Carlton. Wine and dine with La Spaghettata for an authentic Italian experience. Pasta, wine, seafood, steak and so much more. Dine in and enjoy the authentic sights and sounds of Lygon Street. Or order takeaway now via Deliveroo, Uber Eats or Foodora. Eat, drink, love with La Spaghettata. Call 9663-6102. Visit laspaghettata.com.au or find them on Facebook.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.